So, okay, so let's start with actual content. And so on the previous Tuesday, I mentioned the Jones polynomial, and I want to say a few more things about it. And the definition I gave last time, I want to say a few more things about the definitions, and then the definition, then a few more things about the implementation. So the definition I mentioned last time was you map an overcrossing to a certain linear combination of a smoothing, of a vertical smoothing and a horizontal smoothing, and you map an undercrossing to something similar with different coefficients, and then what you get is a union of circles in the plane, and you assign Q plus Q inverse to each circle, and then the result is up to a normalization, the Jones polynomial. I mean, once you do it to all crossings and replace all the circles by with that quantity, you get the Jones polynomial. And somebody asked me at the end of the hour, where did this come from? Okay? And it's kind of a fair question. I did somehow brought it out of outer space. The answer is, in some sense, it did come out of outer space. So I can get to the Jones polynomial starting from some logical process, but it's a very, very long one. Okay? So at the end, you get something very, very simple, but I really don't know a quick way, or not a quick, a way to get to it sort of deliberately. Okay, once it's known, you have it. And then you can check properties. So this is almost true, and here is the sense in which it's a lie. So there is something called the Kaufman bracket, or there is the way Kaufman likes to derive the Jones polynomial, which is again a little bit artificial, but a little bit less artificial. And I skipped it last time because I really wanted to run forward, but in retrospect, it would have been more right to not skip it. So let me unskip the Kaufman definition of the Jones polynomial. So Kaufman says the following, and here is the part which is from outer space, okay? I mean, it's Kaufman is brilliant, okay? I don't have anything else to say. So first of all, at least if you look at the right-hand side of the thing drawn over there, the strands are clearly not oriented, not directed. On the left-hand side, I made them appear directed, but the right-hand side is not consistent with these orientations. So Kaufman says, let's look at unoriented knots. And then, if you have an unoriented knot, there is only one type of crossing. So let's try to compute the so he's defining a thing that he calls the bracket invariant. And the bracket invariant is defined as follows. So he says, I want to replace this by something local and simpler and unoriented. And basically, the only thing you can replace it by is a smooth, a vertical smoothing and a horizontal smoothing. Okay? So Kaufman says, let's take the vertical smoothing, so the bracket of the left-hand side is equal to the bracket of the right-hand side, but let's take the vertical smoothing with coefficient A and the horizontal smoothing with coefficient B. And then Kaufman says, whenever you have a circle, again, I want to replace it by something simpler. The simplest thing I can do is a scalar. So let's call the scalar D. Okay? So this is the end of the brilliance. Okay? So the brilliance was to write this line. And in fact, this line was not written until the 80s, 1980s, even though knots were considered by other means, in fact, much more complicated means, for many years before, since the beginning of the 1900s. So it really is brilliant, even though it's one line. Okay? It's not a line you can come up with immediately. Okay? But after this brilliance, everything is completely logical. So let me go through that logic, which we'll eventually get to the Jones polynomial. Okay? So, first of all, just naming. So, I like to call this one the zero smoothing of the crossing, and this one the one smoothing of the crossing. So the zero smoothing comes with coefficient A, and the one smoothing comes with coefficient B. And if you want to know how to distinguish between them, then I don't know, my memorization trick. I mean, there is some, you know, you have to invent some memorization trick. My memorization trick is to think of this as a highway interchange, and say this is level 0, this is level 1 of the interchange, and then make a right turn. So for the zero smoothing, you enter at level 0 and make a right turn, so you get this line, and if you enter from the other side on level 0 and make a right turn, you get that line. And for the one smoothing, you enter at level 1 and enter and make a right turn. If you don't like this, invent your own memorization procedure. Okay? Okay. So I mean, sort of this is brilliance above this line. This is silliness or just naming above this line, and now comes logic. So I want this to be invariant under Rademeister 1, Rademeister 2, Rademeister 3. I guess there is another point of brilliance here, which is to avoid Rademeister 1. But it's not entirely brilliance. If you know a little bit of knot theory, and you will soon enough, you know that it makes sense to avoid Rademeister 1. So the brilliance is to start with Rademeister 2. So Kaufmann says, I want this to be invariant under Rademeister 2. So I want the bracket of the left hand of this to be equal to the bracket of that. Right? I want the bracket of these two things to be equals. Now I'm not going to, just to save chalk, I'm not going to draw the bracket symbol. So pretend that there is a bracket symbol around this object. I want the bracket of this to be equal to the bracket of that. Okay, what's the bracket of this? So basically I have here two crossings. So crossing number 1 and crossing number 2. And I can smooth them either 0, 0 or 0, 1 or 1, 0 or 1, 1. What do I get? So for 0, 0, let's see, I'll do one of them carefully and the rest I'll copy from my notes. So for 0, 0, I will get, so the zero smoothing here is the vertical. The zero smoothing here is, this is actually rotated 90 degrees relative to that. So the zero smoothing here is the horizontal. Or if you want, you enter at level 0 and then you turn right, and this means that you do this. Okay? And then I connect them as they were connected before, and that's what I get. With coefficient a squared. And similarly, I do the other things. And it turns out that here, both smoothings are horizontal, so you get a picture like this. Here, you get, again, coefficient AB, and both smoothings are vertical, so you get a picture like this. Here, both, well, I don't know, here it's just the opposite of that, so you get a picture like this. Okay? I want this, the overall, to be equal to that. That imposes conditions on A and B, and in fact also on D. So first of all, here you have a circle. You can scratch it out and replace it by a factor of D. Okay? And then you have three terms, this one, that one, and that one, that all look like a horizontal connection. So overall, I have, so the thing that should be equal to that is equal to A squared plus B squared plus, so A squared plus B squared plus A times B times D times that. And in addition, you have AB times vertical. But this is not that, and this is that. So the conclusion is that A times B must be equal to 1, and the other coefficient, A squared plus B squared plus ABD, must be equal to 0. And the conclusion from that is B is equal to A inverse. This is from here. And once B is equal to A inverse, AB is 1, so D is equal to the negative of A squared plus B squared. So D is equal to negative A squared plus B plus, sorry, minus B squared, but B is is A inverse, so negative A to the minus 2. Okay? Well, that was Rademeister 2. Then we have to check Rademeister 3. Rademeister 3 turns out to be pure luck. So basically, I have to compute the bracket of the left-hand side and compare it with the bracket of the right-hand side. And this appears complicated because there are, you know, here we had four terms because there were two crossings. Here it seems like I have eight terms on each side. But by pure luck it's much simpler. So basically you do the bracket trick on the top crossing, on the middle crossing, on this one, and you find that this is equal to, so let's see, the zero smoothing here is this, so you get A times this plus B times the other version, this. Okay? But we've already proven, or for our choice of A and B, if A and B satisfies these relations, and D, then we know that we can apply Rademeister 2. So we can slide this strand first to the middle, and then apply Rademeister 2 again, and then it's behind the upper cup. So this is just equal to that, with coefficient A, plus B times, here there is just nothing to do. Topologically, it's already the same. So, but let me draw it this way. Sorry, B times that. But now, this and that, what have I done? Yeah, this and that. So now you have a horizontal smoothing and a vertical smoothing at the bottom with the right coefficients. So you reassemble them to be a crossing, and QED. So Rademeister 3 holds. Okay? And then the next thing is to check Rademeister 1. And again, the wisdom is to do it last. Maybe in one word, why is it wise to do Rademeister 3 last. You know what? Let me compute the result and then say why is it wise. Okay? So let's see. Here is Rademeister 3. And in fact, there is another version, but I'm doing so. Okay, there is this version and there is also that version. Sorry, Rademeister 1. There is this version and that version. Let me do just one. You have to believe me that the other one works the same way. So the bracket of this is, so let's see, the zero smoothing is you enter here and you turn right. So the bracket, so you have A times this plus A inverse times that, okay? But this is just equal to, so, well, in both cases, you just end up with a vertical line. So you get a vertical line, but here you get A times D. So A times negative A squared, negative A to the minus 2. And here you just get A to the minus 1 times a vertical line. But now you simplify. A times A to the negative 2 is A inverse, cancels this one, and nothing cancels that one, so you are unhappy because you get negative A cubed times a vertical line. Okay? Okay. And then comes, well, I don't know if to call it brilliant because it's really a standard trick, but it's a trick you have to know. And the standard trick is to multiply the bracket by a counter term that has the opposite behavior under Rademeister 1. And this is usually easy to do, or always easy to do. So, definition. But for that, you have to switch to oriented knots, directed knots. So, definition. So, if K is directed or oriented, then every crossing can be assigned a sign. So right-handed crossings are assigned plus 1, left-handed crossings are assigned negative 1. And then you can define the rise of K or W of K to be simply the sign, the sum over all crossings in a diagram of K, well, so I'll just loosely write in K, of the sign of the crossings. So the sign of that crossing. It's very easy to check that the rise is invariant under Rademeister 2 and Rademeister 3. Namely, for Rademeister 2, it's easy to check that no matter how you orient these strands, one of the crossings will be positive and one negative, so their signs will cancel, which is so you get no contribution for a situation like this, which is the same as what you get on the other side. And for Rademeister 3, you can check that you know, if you label the crossings 1, 1, 2, 2, and 3, 3, then this crossing is the same as that, this one is the same as that, and this one is the same as that. So, so the total sign will be the same. Okay? So, however, the rise definitely changes under Rademeister 1. But it changes in an obvious way. If you do, well, here you'll have a positive, this is a positive crossing, no matter how you orient it. So if you do, or if you remove this kink, the rise changes. Drops by one, and if you remove this kink, the rise raises by one. Okay, So therefore, and where should I put it? So therefore, I can define J of K to be the Kaufman bracket of K times, well, a term that has the opposite behavior of this. So just take minus A cubed and raise it to the power, I think you need to take negative derived of K. So basically, if you remove a positive kink, this gets multiplied by negative A cubed, and this gets, no, positive derived of K. And this gets divided by A cubed, because you've dropped the derived by 1. And then that, and we've just proven a theorem, J of K is a not invariant. So to actually get the Jones polynomial, you only have to take this thing and renormalize. So you find that there is always some factor that you can pull out, and you find that A is not the most convenient variable, so you replace A by some power of Q, maybe A becomes Q to the 1 over 4 or something like that, and you get this relation, the thing that's written here. So that's a partial rationalization of the Jones polynomial. Okay? I hope I didn't waste your time. Again, remember my rules that everything is pictured. So here is that. Okay. Any questions, any comments? Maybe, if not, maybe one word in general. So this is somehow, you know what? No, I'll not do it. Let me go back to the programs. Okay? So last time I started implementing the Jones polynomial, and now I want to implement it a little more and analyze the implementation and also tell you that it was a ridiculous implementation and then replace it by a better one. Okay? So last time I did the following. First of all, I've inputted the package. So I hope you can see the cursor just to see what I'm talking about. So I've inputted the package knot theory, and the package knot theory has in it a built-in Jones polynomial, but of course I don't want to use it, okay? But what I really want is the fact that it has a database of all knots, okay? So first of all, let's set K to be the knot 3-1, and then the PD diagram of K is this diagram. And last time I explained what it means. Now I don't know, does it, you remember, Travis certainly knows. Should I explain
don't
it again or?
No, don't worry.
So it, in fact, it wasn't last time, it was last Tuesday. So anyway, this is a certain coding of the knot. Maybe I'll just tell you what the key points are in that coding. So the coding goes as follows. You draw the knot as a planar diagram, and that's the origin of the PD. And you label the edges by, in the orientation given, you label the edges by numbers. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then for each crossing, you start at the incoming lower strand and replace it and name it the crossing with indices I, J, K, L. If you do it for the trefoil knot, possibly not with the numbering that I've used over there, but if you do it for the trefoil knot, you get PD of X1425 3641-5263. So that's a coding of the trefoil knot. Okay? Then the Kaufman bracket becomes basically if you have I, J, K, L, then this goes to A times this smoothing, which is I goes to J, K goes to L, plus B times that smoothing, which is I goes to L, J goes to K. So symbolically, I will write this as X, I, J, K, L goes to A times a path from I, J and a path from KL plus B times a path from IL and a path from J to K. Okay? But since I actually care about the signs of the crossings, given that I've at the end I multiply by this right thing, then my first step is to replace the diagram by a diagram where each crossing has a mark on it. Either it's a minus crossing or it's a plus crossing, but for this trefoil, all crossings are negative, so you only see XMs. And then it's a sequence of, first you replace it by a product of crossings, then this is somehow one of the two key points, so you replace positive crossings by paths, a path from IJ and path to KL with some coefficient, And that's exactly what I wrote there. And then negative crossings with similar things with just different coefficients. And you get this. Then you expand, and now you have eight terms. After the expansion, you have eight terms corresponding to the eight things that you would get when you compute the Kaufman bracket. But now I need to figure out what are the cycles. So first of all, I set the, I make P commutative, and then I declare that whenever you have a path from A to B and a path from B to C, you replace it by a path from A to C. So that simplifies long paths. So I do it. Then I, if I have a path from I to I or a path from I to J squared, so if you have a path from I to J and then a J, so if you have a path from I to J and a path from J to I, so in both cases that's a circle, so I take the previous result and do these replacements, and this is the Jones polynomial of the trefoil. It's kind of in ugly shape, so I can either expand it or simplify it. And in both cases, you get a more reasonable answer. Then I can compare with the built-in answer, and the built-in answer is actually different, and the reason is because the normalization was different. So this is the correct normalization. I mean, you have to take my answer, divide by Q plus Q inverse, and replace Q by square root of Q to get the standard normalization. Okay. And then this is indeed the same as that. Okay? Sorry, I mean, maybe I have to simplify to see, but it's obvious enough. Okay. So next, I wanted to write a Jones polynomial program. So I define J of a knot K to be. So first of all, it's a module with local variables, T1, T2, T2, up to P, all the names that I've used within the program. And then it's basically the same sequence of operations as before, just written within that repeatable module. So T1 is PD of K, T2 is, well, basically it's exactly the same sequence of operations. So let's enter it into the computer, and now I can compute J of 817, and that's what I get. So in that fraction of a second when you weren't watching, the computer was doing 2 to the 8 smoothings and simplifying, so 256, simplifying all of them, simplifying the result, and that's what you got. Now let's compare it with the built-in result. So the built-in result is, well, the same. And then the next thing that I want to do, so you know, maybe I'll start it running and then explain what it does. So first of all, I start it running, and it's still running. You can tell by this line being black, which means that this cell is active. And then what do? I define a pure function which maps k to expand j of k is equal to the built-in Jones of k. So I'm up, and then I take this pure function and I apply it to all nodes with 3 to 10 crossings. There are 250 of them, so it takes a little time. Okay? So that's Mathematica syntax here. But the point is, I define a function which, given k, decides whether my program does the same as the built-in program, and then I take this function and I apply it to all nodes, so I'll just get whether my program agrees with the built-in program for all nodes. Oh, and all of this I run within a command called timing, which says print the answer, but also print how long it took. So it took 53 seconds, and the answer is 250 times the word true. So I know that my program runs well. Well, runs well, but maybe not too quickly. Okay? Next, so you didn't have to believe me that that my verification of the Rademeister moves was correct. In fact, I could have equally well let the computer do the verification. Suppose I wanted. So in other words, underlying the Jones polynomial, there is also an invariant of, or not an invariant, a computable quantity associated with, instead of complete knots, with partial knots. Okay, parts of knots. And it's computed by the same way. So all I have to do, so essentially the same program computes it. So before showing the implementation, I'll turn it into a formal definition. So definition, a tangle is, well, topologically it's a part of a knot, but in practice what it means is you draw a disk in the plane, the boundary of the disk is not a part of the knot, it's just the boundary, and then within it you draw a part of a knot which may have access to the outside. Okay? And I guess it could also have components that do not touch the outside. So here is a tangle. Okay? So a tangle is a picture like this with the endpoints fixed. So you cannot do anything. Basically, the boundary is fixed, so maybe the endpoints are labeled 1, 2, 3, 4, and they cannot move. Nothing can move outside, but otherwise, you can do planar motions within the disk, and the same Rademeister moves as before. Rademeister 1, Rademeister 2, Rademeister 3, and I should have said that all of these lines should have been oriented. Okay, so that's a tangle. So there is actually, so if T is a tangle, you can define an invariant J of T by exactly the same means as the Jones polynomial. Namely, I don't even have to repeat it. Exact same relations. So, I mean, with basically exact same relations. The only thing that changes, so, okay, maybe I'll,
I'll write it, is defined by the same formulas, but the target space changes. The target space is now something else. Where, what is the target space? So the target space is what I will call the temporally Lieb algebra of N, where N is equal to 1/2 the number of n's. So since every line that enters must exit, the number of n's must be even. In this case, it's 4. For the Riedemeister 3 move, the number of n's will be 6. So half of it is 3. So n is half the number of n's. Okay? And what's the temporally Lieb algebra of n? So the temporally Lieb algebra is TL of n is, so basically what you get when you can no longer simplify. So you take a disk, you mark two n points on its ends, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 2n, and you connect them by arcs. Oops, I did wrong. I mean, I got trapped. But in a planar way, because if you had a crossing, you could simplify it. So I got trapped, so I really should have gone from here to here, and from here to here, and from here to here, or maybe by other, in other ways. So it's basically the algebra generated by such things so I suppose I would have to use it somehow depends on with coefficients that are allowed to be polynomials or rational functions in all of the variables that I'm allowing, and I could specialize, I could make it a smaller set of coefficients, but I don't see the point right now. Okay? I should say that it's slightly more convenient to also allow internal circles and mod out by the relation that whenever you have an internal circle, it's equal to the scalar D. So it doesn't change anything because you can get rid of the internal circles, but it does make the notation more convenient. Okay. You know, and maybe last thing, just to be compatible with the implementation, I may as well call this TJ of T, just to separate the names and make it the tangle invariant of a tangle. Okay? So what's the implementation? So the implementation is ridiculous. Namely, it's the exact same implementation with a few things removed. Namely, first of all, my input, instead of being a complete knot, right? So here the input is a complete knot K, and then I have to access the database, so compute PD of K, to turn it into a product of X symbols. So instead, my input will be a product of X symbols. I'll just input the tangle directly. So I'm skipping the first two steps. And finally, at the end, I don't simplify. I don't compare with the standard Jones polynomial. I just use my own conventions, so I don't simplify. So other than that, it's the exact same program.
you can just look at it. I've erased a few things and kept it the exact same program. And I don't know why I made P global instead of, oh, I know why. Instead of P being a local variable for this, I made it global because P is now part of the output. So for example, this temporary leave element is represented as a path from 1 to 2, a path from 3 to 2n, well, to 6 in our case, and a path from 4 to 5. So since p now is an output, it cannot be a local variable. Otherwise, it's the exact same program. So now, since I have a program that can manage tangles, I can just verify that it works. So I want to check Rademeister 1. So Rademeister 1, using my notation, will be just one crossing, and it's a positive crossing. So it's a positive crossing, and if I start from the incoming strand, this one is labeled 2, right? I'm labeling the edges 1, 2, 3. So the incoming strand is 2. And then it's a 2, 1, 3, 2. So, sorry, incoming, positive crossing. I should be starting from 2. Oh, no, and go counterclockwise, sorry. So it's 2, 2, 3, 1. So it's a positive crossing labeled 2, 2, 3, 1. And then I want to apply the Tangle-Jones program. And I think I haven't yet entered it. So let's enter it and now apply. And the result is a path from 1 to 3, which would be the right-hand side of the Rademeister mode. Then let's do the same for the negative crossing. So basically, you check that I've used the right notation, and you run it, and you get the right answer. Then let's do Rademeister 2. So now I will label things 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then the PD notation corresponding to this will be a positive crossing 1, 5, 2, 1. So this is going around this one. And here it will be, so this is 1, 5, 2, 4, sorry. And then this one is a negative crossing starting from 2, so 2, 5, 3, 6, 2, 5, 3, 6. And the second one is, the alternative orientation for Rademeister 2 is written here. And I compute the Tangle-Jones invariant on both of these things. And the results are, in this case, in both cases, you get a path from 1 to 3 and another path from 4 to 6, which is the trivial side of Rademeister 2. And finally, you check Rademeister 3. So Rademeister 3, again, has several variations, but I picked only one. So one variation will correspond to x 4251, x 7382, and so on. The other variation is a different choice of labeling. I compute the Tangle-Jones on both of these sides, and the result are, miss. So it's a bit hard to read, but big miss. So what I do is I take the previous output, part 1, and the previous output, part 2, and check if they're equal. I guess you can check visually. I mean, I don't care what the mess is. I only care that the result is that the two sides are equal. OK. Should I go on or take a break? What? You could use a break. So let's take a break. Meet again at 12:13. OK.